The Business on RTÉ Radio 1 with AIB. We know that your focus is on your business. That's why ours is on supporting you.
But let's look at the whole practice of companies providing housing for employees. In Victorian times, it's something that certainly happened, for example, the likes of Cadbury's and the Guinness family. With the vast profits that some companies are making, is it time now for more employers to engage in that practice again? We're joined by Valerie Mulvin, director at McCullough Mulvin Architects, and Alfonso Bonilla, director of Marimoto Architects. You're both very welcome to the programme. I suppose, Valerie, first to you, just looking back at that reference, you know, to Victorian times. Can you give us a few examples of where employers built houses for their workers?
Yeah, no, there's a really great tradition of that. And it kind of came out of the philanthropy, I suppose, of the end of the 18th century, when there was huge growth and enormous industrialization very quickly throughout the UK. And one of the key ones would be Robert Owen, who built New Lanark. Now, he was a utopian socialist. And towards the end of the 18th century, he got involved in creating these cotton mills, which had a whole series of workers housing and all of making a total environment for people. And that's really important because I suppose housing is not just a single issue. It's not just about having a bed or having a place to cook. It's about how we should live, and it's about making a whole environment. So if you look at people like the Lever brothers in Port Sunlight, they did the same thing in the 1880s. So did the Cadburys, as you've mentioned, in Bourneville. And here in Dublin, Guinnesses were tremendous in just putting together a whole series of places that made it very important for people. Now, what they said was, it's not just about housing. They set up a trust which gave a whole way of living. So you had housing, but you had a bath, so a place for people to wash, because that was important.
And that's an interesting point, yes. Alfonso, as well, isn't it? Because that reflects that they were thinking about it for the long term.
Yeah, and actually, just to put another example in context, there is this idea that the town of Pullman in Illinois was developed in the 1880s. And actually, George Pullman had the idea that he wanted to offer high-quality housing so that he could attract the most the most talented workers, and a little bit philanthropy, but a little bit also his relationship to the productivity of his company. Unfortunately, you know, this company was developing luxury train cars, and by the Great Depression, the company suffered quite a lot. So even they had to fire a lot of workers, and they had to some of the workers had to work in shifts, and that changed the relationship between the companies and the workers, because even though they were still renting from the company and they were being charged the same rent, they weren't getting the same amount of work.
And there's an interesting example during the week there, a businessman in Kerry, Tony Walsh of Walsh Colour Print, he built 13 houses for his employees, and then he has sold them at cost to those employees. Is that the sort of thing that's going on elsewhere, Alfonso?
Well, I actually found a really interesting story from NPR last week that Cook Medical had purchased 62 acres in Spencer, Indiana, and they're looking to build 90 houses for their workers. So they are selling them below market prices. These are houses between 120 and 140 square meters. So for listeners, please don't pass out, but they're being sold at €170,500 and €193,000. I made the conversion yesterday, so that's very, very cheap. Now, these are the standard American dream sprawl type of housing, so, and it is not compared to housing in an urban environment. Again, we're also not talking about architectural innovation where they might be fitting the long-term vision of sustainable housing.
It's but about functionality. And I suppose, Valerie, you know, there is a bit more of a focus now on employers to look at housing. In recent years, we talked about, you know, tech companies, you know, Google and Facebook and Amazon in Dublin, and that they're providing housing basically, I think, by renting houses. But it is a bit different for a company to say, we're going to build houses, as opposed to we're going to buy and rent them out, that they're actually going to create new housing for their employees.
And I think that'd be a great thing if more people did get involved in that. I mean, if you think of it, there was a situation years ago in Ireland where there was a house with the job, and you might be the school teacher, but you got a house. You might have been working in the railway station and you had a house, or the Coast Guard had a house. And that relationship between a job and a place to live is a very healthy one, really. Now, of course, there are longer term things of what happens if you quit the job, do you lose your house? But there's ways, I'm sure, we could make that model into a different situation.
And that's probably one of the differences.
Yes.
Between, you know, if you rent and you're thinking, oh, if I quit the job, I'm going to have to move out, as opposed to, you know, an example of an employer actually building houses and selling it to the employees at cost. So if they quit the job, they still own the house.
They still own the house.
They're part of the community.
Yeah, and perhaps the if they want to sell it, maybe, as we were talking about earlier, Alfonso, maybe that's what happens, that you offer the company back the first opportunity to buy. But I think it's an immensely good model. And I think the problem about housing is that a lot of people look at it and say there's one solution. There isn't. There's so many solutions. And I think the more ways people can get involved in solving the housing problem by different methods, by different models, the better it is, because the government are doing certain things. If private companies started to do them as well, that's a real help.
One of the things, Alfonso, you know, is this realistic on a large scale? So, for example, if you take like Tony Walsh in Kerry, he has a colour print business. He's not in the housing business, but he clearly felt that he wanted to do something for his employees. And if big corporations who would have the resources to do this on a big scale, the problem is that compared to Victorian times in the 19th century, companies will say, that's not what we do anymore. You know, they used to have security guards who were employees. They used to have catering staff who were employees of the company. Everything is specialized now and outsourced. So a big corporation will say, we're not going to get into something that's not what we do.
Absolutely. I think that's that we have to realize that companies don't necessarily want to become housing providers. That's not the nature of why they started a business in the first place. So the only reason why we're hearing companies floating the idea of either building housing or buying existing building stock is because we have a deficiency in our existing housing system. So we have to talk about this in the wider context of the housing crisis that we're facing, which is not just in Ireland, it is a global problem, but it is in context. And if you put it, for example, thinking about how companies are pursuing these housing targets that they consider appropriate to their company structure, their company ethos, their values and their capacity financially and structurally to actually deliver this housing. While it is a good idea for many companies to do this, it is not a solution that is going to land us to solving a huge...
On that point, I know in 2020, I think Google, who are working on the Boland's Mills project at the moment, they have a number of apartments there that they have given to the local community, or they're assigning them through a housing trust to key workers. They're not their own workers. They're not Google workers at all. But I think what it's about,
so even though it's... So they're open to being imaginative,
exactly,
or thinking differently about
and
it.
And I think that's the really key to it, that people recognise that everything, that all our lives are so woven together. Everything is so globalised. You can't do one thing.
And the other, I suppose, riposte to that argument about streamlining it is that a lot of these big businesses are buying wind farms.
Yes.
They could easily say, we're not in the electricity
business.
Generation
yeah.
business,
mm-hmm.
but they can see the benefit and the need to do it. So why should mm-hmm. housing not be different? One thing, there's a story in the paper this morning, it was in the Irish Times, about how there's encouragement now from the HSE. They're looking at hospitals buying or building properties for their staff, particularly with nursing in mind, mm-hmm. to keep nurses in Ireland. Is that something that you think is realistic or would happen?
I think it's a really good idea, because I think we have a lot of people who our health system would just completely founder if it wasn't for the number of people who come in to help us with that. So a lot of those people are sending money home. They sometimes don't have their families with them, sometimes they do. There used to be a tradition of having nurses' homes on all of the hospital, in all hospital settings. I think it makes perfect sense, because people are doing, you know, shift work, they're working nights, they're working at irregular hours. It makes a lot of sense for people to do that, and there's no reason why the HSE couldn't get involved in driving that and providing something co-located on the hospital grounds.
Okay, well, plenty of food for thought there. Valerie Mulvan and Alfonso Bonilla, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.